for a message. I preached a version of this message in Florida a couple of weeks ago, so I guess y'all get to hear, I revised it somewhat. I titled it, Using God's Stuff. Using God's Stuff. So you know how sometimes after a message, we on the way home or maybe sitting around the lunch table, it's like, I can't believe the preacher said that. Why did he say that? And maybe we disagree with it. We don't like it. Well, today I'm here alone, and I am not after church going to stand up here and take testimonies as such. I don't know. To me, that's a little awkward. But I would invite you to, if you have a paper and a pencil, and I say something you don't like or you'd like to critique it, I would actually rather hear criticism from you. And maybe you have you've walked this path in life before and you have more experience or more knowledge than what I'm going to share with you this morning. I'd like to hear that also. And if there's time, maybe we'll have a little bit of an open discussion. But I'm going to talk a little bit about an old English word called stewardship. So a few weeks ago, a few months ago, me and a friend of mine went to an estate auction. And I suppose you all probably have been at an estate auction. So what's an estate auction? Well, either somebody has had a big life change, and this is the easiest way to dispose of all their worldly goods, or sometimes we go to a late estate auction. And that simply means the person has died and the family is sorted through what they want, and whatever's left, easiest way to move it on is to sell it at an auction. And there's nothing wrong with an estate auction. But I want to use it a little bit as an example this morning. This one that I was at, the man was a mason, and he was very obviously a hard worker. His tools were about worn out, but here was all these lines of tables of tools and things he made his living with on this earth, but now he was done with it. He didn't need any of it anymore. God called him to his eternal reward, and he got to use these tools for a short time in his life, and when God said no more, that's it. So now everybody else gets to paw through all the deceased man's stuff and buy it and throw it in the bed of their pickup and try to finish wearing it out. My point is, he was done. And there's a time in my life, the things God has blessed me with, my tools, and I like my tools. They help me get things done, right? My vehicles, my house. There's a time, though, I'm going to be done with them. And you're going to be done with them, too. Sometimes I think I'm going to buy something really quality. You know what I mean? And I like good quality tools. I know a lot of y'all do too. You know, whatever good quality is in your mind, maybe it's a Makita or a Snap-on, let's buy it right so it lasts us for forever. Well, sometimes forever is not as long as we think. So are we starting to understand how we're stewards, whether we like it or not? We're either a good one or a bad one. And so often I get enamored with what I can collect in this world, in my short little stay on God's green earth. I wanna hoard it for myself, and I think it's going to be mine to keep. Genesis 1:28, we'll start by reading there. Genesis 1, verse 28 through 31. And God blessed them and said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given you every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So way back at creation already, God is saying, everything on the earth is for you to use. You can use it. But you are to be good stewards of it. And we can read in other places in Scripture, we will be judged by how we use God's resources. It's kind of scary. Kind of scary, isn't it? God is holding us accountable about how we use the things in this world. We're to use our time, our money, and our talents, all for the glory of God. And it's not to say we can never have any fun. It's not to say we can never, everything has to be so, such a rigid, you know, you follow what I'm saying? I think we are to enjoy life, but we're to be make sure we're doing it in a God-honoring way. We're going to talk as, we could talk about stewarding lots of different things, but we're going to talk especially about money this morning. And what does a Jason Gingrich from Cave City, Arkansas know about money? Probably not much, honestly. I certainly can't give you a sophisticated stock market analysis. All I know is that when times are good, everybody in Wall Street's happy, and when everything's bad, you hear all the horrible things that are going to happen. That world up there is crazy. Can be crazy. But money, the Bible actually has lots to say about money. It does. And just a few warnings. It has some really strong cautions against it, about not becoming obsessed with it. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, "Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy." And Jesus' words in Luke 12, verse 15, "For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of things which he possesses." You know, there's two things in this world that, if you look back in history, have wreaked all kinds of havoc in families, in churches, in countries, in people themselves. Two things. And it's money and it's power. If I see anybody strongly pursuing either one of those two things, those people usually leave a trail of destruction behind them. And they're not usually people that are fun to be around. Have you ever noticed that? A power-hungry person or a money-greedy person are not enjoyable people to be around. They're just not. Now, we need people in leadership, and we do need money to live our lives. But the pursuit of either one of those two things will make a person miserable. Steer clear of them, if you can. But at the same time, I also realized Zig Ziglar had a quote I find a little bit interesting. He said, "I have had money and I have not had money, and I found it a little bit easier to live life with it than without it." We do need money to put food on our table. But we also need to realize the danger in it. And Christians are kind of funny on this subject a little bit. I mean, they're pretty quick to condemn somebody if they think they have too much, and they're pretty quick to condemn somebody if they think they're handling it wrong. And I'm just here to tell you, I think we need a lot of grace with each other on this subject, because there's a lot of different backgrounds, there's a lot of different thoughts. I'm not saying we can't get together and discuss it, but there needs to be an element of grace with it. Not everybody's going to look at it the way I do, and not everybody's going to look at it the way you do. Have grace with each other. I like to think the way I do it is right. You know what I mean? We all like to think we're doing it right. We're handling God's resources right. But that's where we also need each other. I need y'all to tell me if I'm wrong, and that's part of the reason why you're allowed to keep notes and tell me what I'm wrong about after the sermon. And looking back, I realize how blessed I was and how much I actually learned from my mom. I was amazed to have the mom I did that gave me the teaching on this idea. Not some of the stuff I learned from hard knocks in life, but a lot of it came from her. And you know where she got it from? She got it from her dad. And you know where he got it from? He got it from his dad. And from the little bit mom has told me, I never knew my grandpa. Never knew any of my grandpas, actually. They died when I was very young. I have faint memories of them. But my mom's dad was known as a very financially stable person, much more so than his dad, which would have been my great-grandpa. In fact, my mom remembers her grandpa, which would have been my great-grandpa, coming to her dad for a loan. So my grandpa learned things from his dad, but he learned how not to handle money. You know, you follow what I'm saying? He's seen how his dad did it wrong and he changed. And he, as a result, yeah, be it as it may, but his dad would come to him for loans. Just kind of interesting. And like I say, I don't hold that against great grandpa at all. Everybody's different. Everybody, but apparently his son learned things. What do they call that? There's a word for that where you learn to do the opposite of. Anyway, I think you get the point I'm trying to say. I remember mom telling me, it's really not about how much you make, it's about how you manage what you get. And that's right. Probably there was a very famous woman that died recently. And I'm not going to say her name. There's no reason to beat up the people that are already gone. But she inherited a large estate from her father. And probably y'all may know who I'm talking about. But she was a very wealthy. Get this. She had a monthly income of $104,000 per month. Now, where I come from, that's a pretty good chunk of, that's a pretty good check coming in every month. $104,000. She had monthly expenses of $92,000. So she had a lot coming in and a lot going out. And when she died, she owed the IRS she owed them $1 million. And she had other debts and things. She actually, I think, if I read the story correctly, died with a negative net worth. She owed more money than what she had. And for years, she made $104,000 a month. And we say, how is that even possible? How can you squander that much? And it's a sad story. It was a colossal waste of money, in my opinion. But it is about managing what God gives you. It really is. And something else I want to throw in here too is you and me living here in America, we may think we're on hard times sometimes, and there's times we may struggle sometimes to pay the monthly bills. But we are not victims of our circumstances. We're not. You know how many people are down there at the border trying desperately to get into America? And they ain't coming for the pretty scenery, I can tell you that. They're coming because they know this is a place, America is a place that has long been a place where you can go and support your family much better than you can in third world countries. And sometimes I feel like the world's out to get me. Everybody's trying to reach their hands into my wallet and get my money, or maybe whatever. It feels like life hits you with knock after knock. And there are really, those cases are here in America. There's people that live a very Job-like existence. I don't know if it's as bad as Job, but you follow what I'm saying? They have a lot of hard knocks in life. There are those people here. But most of us really need to understand there are people that really want to come here, and here we are. It was handed to us. We were born here, And are we taking that for granted? We're not a victim of our circumstances. Don't get that mindset. If I am a victim, it's because I'm a victim of my own mismanaging abilities, is how it is a lot of times. All right, I'm going to give a list of practical things to consider. Would somebody want to go get me a drink of water, by any chance? Pretty pleased with a cherry on top. Thank you, Peanut. All right, practical things to consider. Proverbs 29:18 says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." And Habakkuk 2:2 says, "Write the vision and make it plain." I think we would do well, I know I do well, to do either a budget. You don't have to do a budget necessarily if you don't want to, but a cost tracking in your life. You know, the thing that gets a lot of people is they are disorganized and they don't care. And I was one of those people at one point in time in my life. I really, really was. And I was pretty broke too. Some people live with the attitude it's just going to all work out, and I kind of admire that attitude. And we watch the government balance their budget, and we know how good that's working out for them, right? We would do it. I really would encourage y'all to, if a budget sounds too scary, at least track your expenses for a month and look back over it. I really would recommend that. Thank you, Peanut. And it's not like it's a scary thing. It's not. All we're trying to do is figure out where we're at. God's gave, I think everybody in here has a job or a stream of income. So what are we doing with that stream of income that God put into our life? You do well to look at that. I do well to look at that. And it's never going to be, no month is ever the same. It's never going to be perfect, but it does, if you track your expenses for a month and then you were to look back over that, you'd be amazed at how much you spend on different categories that you don't think you do. I know I do. Something else I'll throw in here is that sometimes us husbands get the idea it's only our job to take care of the household expenses. If you're married this morning and a woman walked down the aisle with you and said, "I do," and she's at home watching your children, she's got just as much say in how's your the money you earn at your job. She's got just as much say in how to disperse it in your household. And you know what, men, we do very well to take our wives' advice in some of this stuff. My wife is much more of a numbers person than I am. She's much more savvy at some of this stuff than I am. And we do well to take their advice. Not saying that you don't have a vote. Not saying you don't have a vote. We're in it together. Work at it. The second point that I have here is to have an end-of-life plan. And let me tell you something, your first goal for your end of life is to be spiritually ready. Don't miss that point. But right after that, I would highly suggest you either do a will or you do it. Some people prefer a trust, some people prefer, but have a plan for what's going to happen with your stuff at the end of your life. Nobody knows better than you what you want to happen with it. And I know in Arkansas it's a little bit of a hillbilly state, if you want to call it that. And I had a lawyer tell me one time, you can take a brown paper sack and write your will on it, and if you sign it and date it, it's legit. I wouldn't go that extreme. But I would really recommend, y'all, it does your life. The stuff God lets you use. What's going to happen with it? What's going to happen with your children? If both you and your spouse were to die at the same time, who's going to be the caretaker? Who's going to be the executor? Who's going to, are the children going one place? I'll tell you how it is, how I set it up. My children are going one place, and I have somebody else taking care of the, being the executor with the finances. And that executor gets to pay the caretaker of the children out of my leftover house sale or whatever was in my accounts. But, and I'm not saying that's how you have to do it, but have a plan and then tell those people what you, what's expecting of them. It shouldn't be a secret. It shouldn't be a secret. And it just makes it clean. There's enough other emotions going on at a time like that that it's really good to have some clarity for the people left behind. Even if you don't have a huge multi-million dollar estate, you probably own a car. What's going to happen with the car? What do you want done with it? Everybody older than eight, if you're of legal age, 18 or older, I really recommend you go do a will or have a plan. Online will, or there's places you can go other than walking into a lawyer's office. But have a plan. Don't leave your family in a lurch simply because you were too disorganized. And something else that, just to think about, we live in an ever-increasing, seemingly left-leaning world. I don't want to have me and my wife both gone suddenly because God decided it was time to take us home. And my children are left down here, and they go to probate court or however the system works, and the judge looks at me and my conservative Mennonite lifestyle and says, that's too conservative. We're putting the children into foster care. You follow what I'm saying? Don't let the judge make that decision. You make that decision right now. Don't leave your family in a lurch because of it. All right, moving on to things that are maybe not quite so dismal. We have probably half the people here are boys. Is that right? And I happen to be a boy, and guess what boys like? Have y'all ever walked into Martin's shop and he had an engine out of a vehicle and it was sitting there on a stand and he was taking it apart and working on it? And I don't know, probably everybody's a little bit different in this area. I don't know if the women care about it or not, engines or not. But most men walk over there and ooh and ah over this engine. It's amazing how an engine works. Why would anybody drive a Tesla when you could have a gas engine, right? They're big and they're loud, and we like what they can pull and what they can do, and then we take that engine and we wrap it up in a nice shell, and we put Ford or Chevy on the front or Dodge, and then we put leather seats in it and maybe navigation, and we're almost can get mesmerized. You know what I mean? It's amazing what a vehicle will do. And it's amazing how much a vehicle will cost you. I remember as a teenage boy, I so badly wanted this certain car. And looking back, I don't even know why I wanted this car. I wouldn't want it nowadays. But I so badly wanted this car, and I didn't have the money for it. And I came up with this grand scheme. I went to Mom and I told her, I'm just going to go to the bank and borrow the money for this car that I wanted to buy because I needed to build my credit score, which was about the biggest excuse I could think of. And Mom broke my poor, delicate little heart. My little teenage heart, she would not let me do it. She said, "You no." She would not let me go borrow money on this car. And of course it offended my little feelings, but I took her advice and I did not go buy the car. And looking back, I am so grateful Mom did not let me start down the car loan bunny trail. Because once you get on that bunny trail, it's hard to get off. She would not let me go do it, and it's such a blessing that she taught me that. She forbade me to do it. I remember that. I remember that. And I remember the car. And looking back, why I wanted to drive that car 2 miles back a gravel road, I'd have beat it up. It would have been ridiculous. Cars would get, cars and trucks, I just tell you, the last 2 years was a little bit different. They actually went up in value, but that's a very rare time in life. Well, usually when you buy a car, you know what happens? They're worth about nothing in about a decade. We were looking through old family pictures here a while back at Mom's over the holidays, and there was a picture in there of, it was probably back in the early 90s, just a picture of a parking lot full of cars. And I looked at these old cars, and they're all in pristine condition. You know what I mean? They're shiny, and they looked new. But I recognized the styles. They were all old. And those cars ain't worth, unless there's a few collector's items in there, they're not worth but scrap value today. And if you were to go out here and take a picture of the parking lot right now, give it 10, 15 years, it's going to be the same thing. Cars and trucks go, they go down in value. So it's not a real good idea to owe money on something that's going down in value faster than it's going to go up. You follow what I'm saying? Just something to think about. In fact, as a general rule of thumb, it's probably not a good idea to total up all your vehicles, and if they equal more than half of what you make a year, you probably have too much money tied up in vehicles. Just something to consider. And I want to be clear here. I don't think car debt or debt is a sin. I don't think it is. I just don't think it's wise. Talking about debt, that's the fourth point here. Debt is not your friend. The Bible, I don't believe I can find anywhere in the Bible that it calls debt sin. I don't think it's, in fact, I don't even know if I could say it's a salvation issue as such. But I do know it has a way of dragging a person down. Y'all know how easy it is to sign on a line and walk off with whatever the item is? We still owe money on our house, which drives me kind of nuts, but we're working on it. And it was so easy to sign. It was not hard to sign the papers. And then you get your first statement, and you see all that money you owe. It's almost a physical weight on your shoulder. The Bible has all kinds of negative connotations about debt and how you're a fool if you use it. I don't know that it ever calls you a wise person for using debt. I'm not saying your salvation is in jeopardy or anything like that. I'm just saying the Bible, from what I can find, does not say it's wise. Something else to think about is we don't really view debt like this. But debt is actually a product. If you work in a bank as a mortgage salesman, you get paid by how much mortgages you sell, the number of whatever the financial number. I don't know what percentage it is, but you get paid for selling that product. They view it as a product. And how cushy of a sales job would it be to have people literally coming to you and begging you for your product, and you have to be the one to tell them no if they don't qualify? That's a pretty cushy sales job, is it not? People like to get all cozy, and they get a feeling of pride if Mr. Banker thinks they're trustworthy enough to give them this money. Isn't that weird how that works in your mind? But that's the other side of it. One of the stupidest things I ever done, and I did it against my wife's wishes. So when we got married, I bought a $600 lawnmower. It was a beauty. Y'all should have seen it. It looked like it came straight from Harbor Freight or somewhere. It was quite honestly a piece of junk. It was the kind that of mower you would come home from work and you would see it sitting in the yard, and you knew you were going to walk in the house and your wife was going to say the silly thing died out there. And it did. It had all kinds of issues. The belt would come off, and it worked. But anyway, so I decided, I'm a man, I can fix this problem, right? Remember how Ernie said last Sunday, we're manly men, we can fix our own problems? Against my wife's knowledge even, I think I just went and did it without asking her, I went to the store and I bought a new lawnmower. I was going to fix this problem forever. And the crazy thing is, I actually would have had enough money to pay for the lawnmower. But for whatever odd reason, I didn't. And I put the silly lawnmower on payments. And I proudly brought it home, and my wife was less than amused. She didn't say a whole lot, but she was not very proud of my decision. And it was, I forget what I paid for the mower, $4,500 or something. And it was so easy to sign up for that mower and haul it home. It was not hard. And then I started having to pay for this thing. And you pretty soon realize that the borrower is slave to the lender. Looking back, I am not proud of that decision. It was one of the silliest things I ever did. I made an emotional decision on a whim, because I was sick and tired of the old mower. And if, just a warning to myself and to y'all, if you get sick and tired of something and you have, your emotions are stirred up, it's probably not a good time to make a financial decision. Now, I did pay for the silly lawnmower, and I actually didn't pay any interest on it. But looking back, that thing was, I should have never done that. I should have listened to my wife. Just a little bit on credit cards. I used to get all, I could have got all bent out of shape a few years ago about how awful credit cards are. Credit cards aren't awful. They're not terrible. In fact, if most people here probably carry one, I don't care if you carry one. But they got me in trouble as a young man, as a young married man. Actually, very first in our marriage, I had a credit card, but I didn't use it for whatever reason. And then I thought I was going to get sophisticated, and I started putting more and more stuff on credit cards. And it got to the point, I always paid it off, but it got to the point where one time I came home from work and my entire paycheck went to pay for the silly credit card bill. And I realized I was spending more money on this silly card than what I had to. It caught me. Now I know y'all are probably more disciplined than I am, and y'all can, that's fine, but I got rid of that card and I hadn't had one since. And the amazing thing is, I still have all the money to pay the bills. You know what happens if you stand in line to order a hamburger or something and you're putting it on plastic? I'm not saying it happens to you, but it happened to me. Do you want to supersize that? You want to put something else with it? You want to add something else on it? It's pretty easy to say yeah and hand them a card. It ain't hard at all. You don't feel any pain at the moment until the end of the month comes around and you get the bill. So just a little word of, yeah, warning, I guess, or that was my experience with it. Deuteronomy 28:12. I find that verse a bit interesting. God was telling them, "And thou shalt lend unto many nations, and thou shalt not borrow." Kind of interesting. God's saying, "Don't borrow." Just a little bit on mortgages. Just a couple of guidelines or whatever. Your mortgage payment shouldn't be more than about a fourth of your pay you take home every month. You follow what I'm saying? So if you make whatever, and your mortgage payment, you shouldn't buy more house than what 25% of your monthly income is. Just banks will loan 40 to sometimes 50% of a person's monthly take-home bill on a mortgage. And that it's hard to prosper if about half your money is promptly going out the door every month to pay for a house. It's just hard. All right, the last point I have here, tithing and generosity. So there's only three things you can actually do with money. If you stop and think about it, you can give it, you can save it, and you can spend it. And I'm here to tell you, God's been working on me because I can be a very stingy person if I so desire. But I am learning that giving is actually one of the funnest things you can do with the money that God's blessed you with. It really, really is. It doesn't really make sense in my human hoarder mind all the time, but it does something to a person if you can give. I'm going to read a verse in James. James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. God is saying every good gift and every perfect gift is coming from God. And you know what? We can be, how's that song, channels? I think we need to be channels. God has endless resources, and he's channeling them to us through us, and we can spread that blessing to others. I might try to draw. I don't know if I'm not very good at drawing, but just to give you a little bit of an idea. So I picture God in heaven, and all these blessings are pouring from God. And then imagine this to be a pipe, and they go, it fills up, say this is us, and then there's other people. Just imagine. So all these blessings are coming from God, and they pour down through this river of blessings, and they fill up our cup, and then they go on and they fill up the next person's cup. Is that you kind of get what I'm saying? The problem is that sometimes I see what blessings that God's pouring out, and my cup is full and overflowing. But I don't really like that he let the next guy have more than he did me. He let the next guy have whatever, a nicer car or a nicer house. And I try to channel God's blessing. I stick my foot out into the river, and I try to make it bigger down here. I want more of the stuff God's blessed me with, blessing the others with. And before I know it, I'm trying to block off the river. And you know what happens when you have a pond, a muddy pond that's just sitting out in the middle of a field with no spring or no river running through it? They kind of stinky, stagnant. They have moss and whatnot growing on them. They're not pleasant ponds. They're not where you'd go swimming in the summertime. And before I know it, I'm trying to block off. That guy got a whatever. I want that too, so I try to dam up the river and fill up my own cup a little further. You follow what I'm saying? I'm trying to tell God what I need more than what others need. And I become a selfish holding pen for God's resources. Instead of being willing just to let my cup fill up, my family, my whatever's in my cup, God, instead of being willing to catch that underneath God's pipe of blessings and being content with that full cup, I want a bucket and I want a stock tank and I want a pond and I want to hold it. Genesis 12, verse 2. Let's look at what God was telling Abraham. God was telling Abram, "And I will make thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing." Let me tell y'all, brothers and sisters, something. We are a very blessed people, and we are blessed that we might be a blessing to others. We don't get a blessing from hoarding. We just don't. I don't know that there's any happy hoarders. God's called us to live unselfishly, not to abandon our families in the process. We're not to abandon our families and give everything we make away. You know, there's a story comes to mind of, what was that man's name? That Glenn Slick, I think, was his name. He started Graber Post in Davis County. I think his name was Glenn Slick. I read his book, and he came from a very poor home life, or very sad on a bunch of different levels. But his dad he was very frugal or overly tightwadish. And it came time for a new family car, and dad went out and bought the absolute cheapest car he could find, which happened to be a hearse. And he'd take his family to church in a hearse. Now that to me is... That's too much. We're not to be tightwads like that. We're not to be... That could almost... I don't know if that would psychologically damage your family or not, but it's pretty far down. Anyway. Why did I say that story? I guess... Don't make your cup shouldn't be so small that your family's starving. Make sure your family's taken care of, but then the extra, give it. You don't have to be so tight that you have to drive a hearse to church because you want to be a blessing to others. Another thing is give to people who can never give in return. You know, it's not hard to give money or give time or talents or whatever to people who can actually do something back for you. You know, we might get a return on our investment if we give money here or do it this way. Don't do that. Give with no strings attached. Don't do it thinking you're going to get a favor in return. That's a bad attitude. And something else, everybody can give something. And I ain't talking about just money. If you don't have money right now, you got talents. There's things you know how to do that other people can benefit from. There's time. You can donate time. It doesn't have to be just... I ain't talking about just money. In fact, the older I get, the easier it is to give money and be selfish with my time. Have you ever noticed that? And that can be just as wrong as being selfish with their money. Malachi 6, 3, 6, and 10 through 10. I used to mess up giving pretty badly, to tell you the truth. I would come Sunday morning, and you know there's an offering, and you go to the checkbook, and you see how much you have left, and you kind of give your leftovers. You know what? When I did that, I didn't always have a lot of leftovers to give. And then when I actually started doing a budget and taking my 10% off the top, I gave quite a bit more than I used to, and I still was majestically not short of paying my bills every month. It's amazing what happens when you give off the top. Malachi 3, 6 through 10, "For I am the Lord, I change not, therefore ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your father, Ye are gone away from my ordinances, and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, and there may be meat in my house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open up the windows of heaven and pour a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. God, I know this is Old Testament, but God was shaking up these people just a little bit, telling them that they are literally robbing him by withholding their tithes from him. And I know tithes is a little bit of an Old Testament thing, but I think it's a good baseline for us to at least give 10%. There's a verse. I thought I wrote it down, but I don't see it. In the New Testament, that talks about each man giving as he seems fit, or each man giving as, somebody help me. As God has prospered him, that's right. Which almost could seem like it's open-ended. Give whatever you want to, right? Maybe God's calling us, some of us, to give more than 10%. Maybe we should give 20%. 2 Corinthians 9:6-7, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall also reap sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall also reap bountifully. Every man, oh, here it is, every man as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. God's saying, don't be a tightwad. You know, there's a big difference between being frugal and being a tightwad. There really is. Luke 12:48 says, to whom much is given, much shall be required. You know, it's kind of interesting. You see these news articles nowadays. People like to hammer the 1% rich in the world. They're not paying enough. They're not paying their fair share of taxes. There's all kinds of inequality. And you see them saying this stuff all the time. And what's interesting is if those people would just stop looking at America and they would take the whole world and look over the whole world. If you make $34,000 per year, you're in the world's richest 1%. And a lot of those people barking at the wealthy in the country are in that 1%. And they're talking about how the 1% aren't giving enough. And I'm telling y'all this morning, God has blessed all of us abundantly, more than what we're able to withhold. If we're willing to get organized and we're willing to have a giver's heart, it's amazing what God can do through his people. 3 billion people in the world live on less than $2 a day. All right, in closing here, and then y'all, I'll give y'all opportunity to say what's your experience? What did I say wrong? Where am I wrong here? But I want to picture this scene at the end of my life, when I get to heaven. And I don't want this to be what God tells me. You can put yourself in this shoe if you want to. It's just something to make us think. So picture me getting to God's throne, and God says, hello, son, tell me about your life on earth. And I say, well, God, it wasn't very easy. There's a lot of hard work down there. Them thorns you put down there in the garden made life miserable. Seemed like all I could do was sweat and work just to keep food on the table. And God says, well, didn't you live in America? Wasn't that about the easiest place and time in history of the world to make a living? What was wrong? Were you a bad manager of my stuff or what? I said, no, I don't think so. I was pretty good at managing, but I took you really serious when you said it's easier for a rich man to go through the eye of a needle than it is for him to go to heaven, so I made myself poor. God, oh, I see. Well, how'd you make yourself poor? And I say, well, I had good health, and I had a good job, and I made more than nearly anybody else in the world down there. So I had to do something. So I went and I got a big 30-year mortgage that took up almost all of my income every month. And then I went and bought two new cars, one for me and my wife. And I'd put them on payments and trade them out for new ones about every 3 years. And then, God, if you throw in a boat payment and a side-by-side payment, I could barely make ends meet. And there was a few months that if you hadn't sent that credit card offer in the mail just in the nick of time, I wouldn't have made it. I don't want that to be my story at the end of life. God has given each of us brains, and he's given each of us intellect. We can handle the resources with God's help. We can handle the resources that he's channeling through us for his kingdom, for the benefit of others. We can with God's help. God needs people here, and he needs them in every corner of the globe. And I don't think we need to feel guilty for living in America. God needs Christians here too. But we're very blessed people here in America. We're very blessed. And like Daniel said in children's class, are we thankful for that? And if I am thankful, is it showing up in my generosity? Is it showing up in my how I handle everything that God's blessed me with? That song, it reminds me of that song, Channels Only, Blessed Master. We're just channels for God.